Warning. Listening to this show may result in increased levels of inspiration, motivation, and innovation. Side effects can include the immediate urge to take massive action to build a better business and life for yourself and others. You've been warned. Welcome to Influencers Radio with your host, Jack Mize.
And welcome back to another episode of Influencers Radio. You know, legal problems, they can be one of the toughest and most confusing times in a person's life. Whether it's defending yourself as the accused or standing up for yourself when you've been wronged. Well, today, I'm thrilled to have with me Cheryl Deptovich-Diaz of the Diaz Law Firm in Los Angeles, California. She is the defender and voice of the underdog. Those who are new to the legal system or just intimidated by the complexity and desperately need help navigating their way through the process. Cheryl, welcome to Influencers Radio.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, I am happy that you are here as well. And, you know, for a profession that often gets a bad rep, you truly bring nobility to the law. And I think, you know, we're going to get into that. And I think it's going to be easy for people to see because you have such a refreshing outlook on the legal system, and also you can tell a true love for the law and what it was meant to provide to everybody in this country. And I really want to get into that. So first of all, I know the law is for everyone, but you really do. You are that voice for the underdog. Can you first describe the types of clients that really fuel your passion for the law?
Oh, absolutely. I love that question because, you know, when I first started as an attorney over 14 years ago, I was taking on any case that came to my door as a solo practitioner, as a solo attorney, hanging up my own shingles. And I was just trying to help who came at the door. But then eventually, it came to be that I was attracting, it seems, that people that were strangers in or felt like strangers in the legal system and felt like they were not really welcomed, whether they were new to the language that's used of English, or new to the country and new to the whole concept of a legal dispute. Maybe they've been served with summons for a divorce, or back then I was handling eviction cases, you know, or whether they've never stepped foot in a courtroom before and don't know what to do. So for me, the clients that I love helping are those that are lost but willing to be guided, who are upset and angry and maybe, you know, really feeling fire in their belly because now they're in this mess, but also want to stand up for themselves and need the help on how best they can do that. And my clients just gift me every day by showing me their courage and willingness to fight. They inspire me so much to find the nitty-gritty so that we can ignore the rest of the noise. And I can go on about my clients because I love them so much. And they really honor me by choosing me. And I'm glad that they get to really they allow me to hold their hand, stand side by side with them, and be their voice in court. And also, and I can only do that when I really know their story. I mean, I can't speak for them if I don't know what's in their heart. And so it's a close relationship that we develop. And, you know, we spend a lot of hours before we get to any of the major chapters in a legal case, you know, initiating the new case, defending yourself in that first document that you file, going through mediation, settlement conferences, and then eventually maybe even trial. Not every case gets to trial, but if we have to, you know, so it's a close relationship, and it's people who are going through turmoil and turbulence, but they're not asking me to scorch the earth, you know.
Well, and I think that's the one thing that I think separates you immediately, and is that you do take the time to understand their story. A lot of times I hear people that have talked to attorneys that, you know, it's just very quick, very short, very curt. Well, you know, just let me understand what the facts are here, what's happened, without really understanding their story. And I think one of the reasons that, you know, that you bring those types of clients is the compassion that you have for them, and the empathy that you develop for them. And I think that can only be, you know, that can only be created through taking that time to listen. And I can imagine that you must have the patience of a saint for a lot of these, but what is it that you specifically look for when you're listening to their story? Because I know to them it may be a sympathetic ear, but I know to you you're picking things out of that so you can really understand how to help them. Can you kind of describe that process?
Yeah. So, for example, like if a client comes to me and they want something new in their life, you know, and maybe they want, they're asking about a divorce and they're worried about what life could look like during a divorce and after a divorce. So some of the things that are involved. What about, you know, sharing children, child custody issues? What about assets that you have, property division? What about safety and security, you know, and anger and violence that comes with that? That's restraining order land. So a lot of the times the process is, what is it that you want? What is it that you care about? What is it that you want to hold on to? What is it that you want to get rid of? And it's finding out all of those things. And then I let them know, well, now that you've told me all of this, this is what the law says about all of these things. So, for example, if I have a client that says, I don't ever want to pay spousal support to a client, I mean, to my spouse, to my ex, then I tell them what the law says about spousal support. I tell them not just what the law says, but why the law exists and what's the policy behind that, the social aspect of it, you know, and so I get to explain all of those things in meaningful ways. And because after you build rapport with them, then you can speak their language and they can hear you. And then they can say, you know what, you're right. Maybe I should offer spousal support. Maybe I should, you know, go ahead and say, yes, I'll pay some spousal support. Or maybe they'll say, okay, yes, that makes sense that no one should be destitute just because now we're divorcing and I took care of you, or I was the primary breadwinner and now you're no longer going to have access to those funds. Forget you. No. Okay. We'll take care of each other for a bit longer because we did say we'll take care of each other, you know? So what happens is we'll craft a settlement that maybe it'll be for a certain amount that's manageable, or maybe it's for a certain period of time that's more acceptable, but they get to decide and have clarity on those things because they understand what the law was meant to do. And I guide that through my clients. You know, for example, I had another case where there was a slap that happened. Oh, now you can go into court and ask for domestic violence restraining orders. Okay, let's pause and figure out what that really will do to your case. It will increase the conflict, it will increase the complexity, and there will be rules and orders that tells you how you can interact with this person. If you have children involved, do you really want to have those limitations? If this slap is just, you want the restraining order just to be punitive, or are you really scared for your life? And those are the kinds of conversations that we have, because the Domestic Violence Prevention Act turns on the word prevention. It's not there to punish. It's not there to gain an advantage in a case, but it's there to prevent violence in the future. So I guide my clients through that.
And, you know, and that's no easy task, I would imagine. One of the things that really fascinates me with attorneys, people in the legal system, is their ability, and also they often tell me their necessity to keep emotion out of it, at least on their part, to be emotionless. But to me, this seems like it's very tough because, and especially the types of, you know, the types of clients that you work with, there's so much emotion around what they're dealing with, whether it's blame, shame, guilt, anger, right, that they're dealing with. And one of the things that really stands out to me is, you know, you talk about peace. You know, you want peaceful resolutions to this, and you're very, you know, firm and direct when you speak to people that you're not into representing vengeance, and that kind of, you know, what you just alluded to is, you know, why is it important to you to understand? And is that part of that listening process to understand why they're seeking a certain legal avenue, and you know what the result is or the outcome that they're looking for, and do you either try to steer them in a peaceful direction, or are there some people that you just say, you know, I may not be the best fit for you?
I think there's definitely been times where I've had to turn cases away, or I've told colleagues trying to refer who graciously refer me to some cases where they're asking me to scorch the earth, and I'm really not that attorney. And I've been lucky enough that I've been lucky and grateful that I attract those clients who are not asking me to scorch the earth, because that's why it's so important for me to have my voice in social media, my voice in my website, so they know who I am before they even reach out to me, that I'm not about to punch below the belt. Number one, it's not permissible for, you know, we can be zealous advocates, but we are bound by ethics. And some people who want to hire me that want me to dance along the lines of our ethical rules, I'm not willing to dance that dance. And I'm very upfront about that. And so, yeah, I do guide people towards more peace. And I do that, not that I won't have resistance from them, you know. And so it is about education. And it's not because I know more. It's just that I happen to have studied the law. I spent 4 years in the evening program working as a secretary during the day, working as an elementary fourth grade classroom aide, working as a bookkeeper full time, and then going to school at night. And so I know what the law says. And so my job is really to tell you, you want that? Here are the possibilities. This is what can happen. These are your options. And again, we're bound by ethics, and I'm not going to punch below the belt.
Well, and you know, using those analogies, it's really interesting, because I've heard you say, and I've seen you talk about where, you're not that pit bull attorney. You're not that aggressive. You're not willing to punch below the belt, but, that doesn't mean you're not willing to fight, but you're going to fight clean. And what's interesting, if you don't mind me bringing up some of the personal, the side of your personal life, is, it's really fascinating to me, the dichotomy of your interest and passions around both yoga and boxing. And I think those are just perfect, metaphors for the way you are in law. Does that tie together?
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, I am a pit bull owner. I've rescued several pit bulls in my life. I have one left right now, Maxim, who's actually right next to me. And I love pit bulls, and they have a bad rap, just like many lawyers, right? But yes, you know, I come from the whole perspective of that line of martial arts where it's defense, but we have the skill to defend ourselves. You know, we can slip and slide and duck and, you know, and throw a punch when we need to. And I do cultivate that in myself, and my clients understand that. And while we're always looking for an eye towards resolution, and our tagline being fighting for peace, that word fighting is in there, you know. So we're not just fighting over silly stuff. We're after the big picture. And, you know, I have really good colleagues. I have a lot of respect for my colleagues and opposing counsel. And some of opposing parties will fire their attorney saying, "You're too nice to Cheryl." And because I do develop that working relationship and rapport with them, because and sometimes I'll get an aggressive attorney who is, you know, wanting to argue, and I'll always stop the conversation, say, "I'm not here to argue the facts. My job is not to convince you of my client's facts. My job is to convince the judge when we're in front of the judge. Since you're not the judge, let's stop talking about he said, she said. Let's talk about how to move this case forward. How do we get to the next thing?" And a lot of the times, it works. And it's a reflection of reality. For example, less than 20% of cases actually go to trial in family law cases in California. You know, and it's really about the ability of an attorney to settle cases. And a lot of that is you have to put your ego aside. You have to put your pride aside. And the ego and pride that you've adopted and received from the client that you're representing.
You know, how you're describing that, you know, it kind of goes to that when you're talking about the martial arts, you know, the best, I guess, defense is to avoid the fight, right? And I guess right. I think about that as, you know, if you can do that without trial, of course, people – to the layman, you know, we watch all these law shows, trial, you think that's about where you spend all your time. But I guess you want to avoid that. That's a success, is when you can avoid that, correct?
Absolutely, yes. You know, there's a whole saying, for example, again, back to family law, there's a book by Janet Johnson who talks about a successful divorce and a failed divorce. You know, there's 1 million children each year who experience their parents go through a divorce. In a span of 2 decades, that's more than 5 million children who now have to grow up with the conflict of their parents. And so for me, a successful divorce is one where you get in, you get out, and then you build your new chapter where you are successfully co-parenting with your ex, and that you commit to your children. And that's the primary focus. A failed divorce is where you keep fighting over and over, you know, different degrees of hostility and conflict. And that's not good, you know, and it affects the children. And for me, that's on a personal level, that's important for me. I think that unhappy children grow up to be unhappy adults, and that's not good for us. And I use my profession to help build peace for all of us, because I do believe we're all connected.
Well, you know, you mentioned divorce, and I know a lot of people think, I guess, what's the common figure, you know, half of all marriages end in divorce. And I think a lot of people think that, well, divorce, you know, especially for divorce attorneys, You know, that creates an endless supply of customers. But you actually, we were talking a little bit earlier before we started that's not necessarily the case right now, especially in California. Can you run through some of that?
Yeah, you know, I hear the same messages as everybody else that, you know, one in two marriages end in divorce. And actually right now we are in a 50-year low. We have less divorce than before. Back then, it was every 23 out of 1,000 people got divorced. Right now, it's 15, 23 to 15 out of every 1,000. And marriages are lasting longer, and there are less court filings. And, you know, at the same time, less people are getting married. Back then, 85 people out of 1,000 got married, and now it's 33, 85 to 33. That's drastic drop in marriage rates. And also, older couples are the ones getting divorced, like the Bill Gates of the world. I had one case where the length of the marriage was 55 years.
And oh, my.
They were getting a divorce. Yeah. And in, you know, California, we were thought of as, and it was true back then, we were 50 to 65% divorce rates. And you'd think that, but right now, we're 9.3% divorce rate. We're in the top 10 lowest of having divorce rates. And so...
That's amazing.
Right now, especially with the pandemic, you would think that the divorce are going up, and they're not actually. And I think, personally, I think that it's due to a couple of things. Research does show that 58% of couples say that they during the pandemic, they have come to appreciate their spouse more. And more than half agree that their commitment to marriage has deepened during the pandemic. But I also know that the courts have been closed. Our clerks of the court, who, you know, are the wheels that turned this whole justice system and working behind the scenes, I know they're overworked, and there was a lot of work closures. And I think there might be just some backlog in that. But the trend is true that we are in a 50-year low in terms of divorce rates.
Wouldn't that be amazing if the divorce rate dropped because courts were closed?
Well, you know, it was really hard during the pandemic navigating that, because while the numbers say 58% say they appreciate their spouse and the commitment have, you know, deepened, I know for in terms of my workload, I did get a lot of people also say, I'm realizing for the first time, because we're spending so much time together, that I don't like my spouse, you know, and there was a lot of restraining orders that were needed, and it was difficult to process with courts being closed.
I can imagine.
It was a challenge.
And we talk about those, yeah. the marriage of 55 years. I can't imagine after 55 years how you wake up one day, you know what? I can't take it anymore. You know, that's just so odd, but I guess it happens, huh?
Yeah, I have some, you know, just last week, the duration of the marriage there, the length of marriage was 30 years, 31 years. Yes.
Wow. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is, you know, the law, it's no easy thing to navigate. All right, and I guess if it was, there wouldn't be a need for attorneys. But I mean, it seems like it, and to a lot of people, it's overly complex. And you know, there's the saying, ignorance of the law is no excuse. But it's certainly not uncommon among some very well-meaning people. And I think that's where your compassion and empathy can come in when, and I think you touched on it before, when you have to explain to someone that, you know, even though their intentions were, you know, they were well-intentioned, they're still in the wrong. Do you find that that's a tough pill for some folks to swallow? And how do you help them you know, get a better outcome than just having to, you know, accept it?
Well, it is tough. You know, for example, I also do litigation defense, and a lot of my clients in that area are small business owners or people who just really have been sued and they don't even know what they did wrong. And sometimes they bring me the stack of court documents and like, Cheryl, I don't understand what I did. And a lot of the times it is just sheer ignorance of the law. And you know, my job is to guide them to make amends if there was a true wrong, make sure it doesn't happen again, so bringing them to compliance and setting up their business in a way that this issue cannot come up again, and protecting them overall. And, you know, I do believe that there is good in everybody. And I focus on that with my clients. But sometimes people file lawsuits because they're looking for a quick dollar. And if some of the people that I represent become victim to that, shame on us once, but it'll never happen again, because now they know the law. Now they know how to comply with the law. Now they know how to protect themselves. And they're very grateful for that. And that's my job. My job is to make sure that they're learning, because we all make mistakes. We're humans, after all. And we are worthy and we are deserving of peace like everybody else. And sometimes it gets attacked by lazy, greedy people. But that's okay, because now we're ready for the next one, and we know how to do better.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one thing that a lot of people don't think of. And I think, and maybe I'm stereotyping, but I would imagine, especially in California, there's areas where a lot of small business owners are people that came here from another country even. And they work hard, and they're the backbone of this country, and they really provide such a great service. And yes, and I think they're taken advantage of sometimes by people who find that, get that little niche in the law, those gotcha cases like you talked about. Yeah. And, you know, I've been here my whole life in this country, and the language of the law is often foreign to me, and you do such a remarkable job in translating that. But I can imagine it could be exponentially more difficult for someone that did come to this country trying to better themselves and provide a better life for their families. And I think one of the things that really provides you, I don't know what the advantage or maybe the inspiration or motivation is, you kind of have that in your background, right? Could you go Absolutely. Into that? Because I think that's an important tie that may, you know, bind some of your passion around this with the folks that you help. So I'd like you to go in that, if you don't mind, just your background. Yeah. and you know, what led you up to this.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I was born in the Philippines, and our economic reality was dire, and we, like many people, came to this country to get a better life. And I went from, you know, Manila slums to inner city Los Angeles, where life was difficult as well. You know, our standard of living went up. That's true. But it was still hard. Poverty was a good friend. A friend. It was always around, and it was hard. I'm proud of my parents for they worked, you know, to make ends meet. It was very hard, and we came here with nothing, and it was not easy. My family's greatest, proudest moment was that we never got welfare. Like, that's a badge of honor. you know, but we were very close to it, you know, but there's a lot of pressure on immigrant families not to seek welfare, and that there is a lot of stigma around it, and somehow you're less than because of that. And my family fell into that, but I know that life was very, very difficult. And how can I not be an attorney after all of that? How can I not be an attorney when I'm seeing threats of eviction, when we are living paycheck to paycheck, when there is gang violence in the streets, when walking home from school, your friend is assaulted, and, you know, you have your jacket or your necklace stolen from you when you're walking home. And so I felt all of that. I felt all of that pain, not just my own families, but I felt my communities. And my mom worked, we lived in right outside downtown Los Angeles, and my mom worked as a cashier at a Chevron station in Westwood. And I would go with her at night sometimes during her entire shift. She'd work overnight. And I would see the college kids. And to be honest, I saw white people for the first time, you know, because that my community was, we were Blacks, Latinos, Asians, Filipinos. And in my high school, my graduating class was 700 and something. We had 1.5 white people. I say half because the other Polish was an immigrant, you know, so college was eye-opening in terms of finally sharing space and culture and discussions and conversations with white people. So it, for me, this whole idea of not knowing how things are supposed to be, how the system works, how education works, how the law works. But it's in every aspect of our life. You know, we really could have used a lawyer at the dinner table every single bit. But that's where that compassion comes from. You know, I know poverty, and out of sheer need, I needed to learn how do we stop this? How can you work so many hours and still get barely enough? It didn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, like I said at the top of the show, you're a person, you know, that does, you bring nobility to a profession that often gets a bad rap, and you help people. I guess at the core, you help people find dignity where it's hard to come by oftentimes when, you know, legal issues do pop up. And I think a lot of that can be explained and summed up, and you've done it so brilliantly with the Diaz Law Firm's, the philosophy and the core values of your law firm. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd like you to ask you to go through those, because I know there's the equality, the partner with justice, peace, self-criticism. Can you go through those? Because I think that would just shine a spotlight on what it truly means to work with you. And I think really for the people who work with you, it really means to truly know you. So can you walk through those? Because I think it'd be just a tremendous for people to really understand that.
Yes. So I spent a lot of time really figuring out who I am as a person and therefore as an attorney. And I was told I should have core values so that people can really know who I am and what I stand for. And I'm proud to say that I came up with 4, and they're on our website. And I believe in equality and partnership with justice, peace, and self-criticism. And all of these are, for me, not just passive items, but really active items, meaning that we have to participate in all of these things. So in terms of equality, I think that I believe all people deserve to be recognized and treated as equal, But for us to achieve that equality, we have to see eye to eye fully, completely, and honestly. And for us to see eye to eye, that means we have to look at each other. That means we have to spend time with each other. We have to occupy the same space and get to that opportunity to hear from one another. And then in terms of partnership with justice, I really believe in my core that concept that attorneys are officers of the court. And as such, you know, we are partners in the pursuit of justice. You know, of our 55 or so founding fathers, 35 were lawyers. And so as our society developed, the whole idea of lawyering is built in. It's in the very fiber of our social fabric. And yes, lawyers have a bad rap, but I personally believe that it is as partners of justice, we have that duty to lawyer in a noble profession. And because of that, we have the power to transform our society and move it towards true equality. And then I believe in peace. And for me, peace is not just something that is guaranteed, but peace is something that we have to fight for. We have to create it. But peace is not just something that can exist in the theoretical realm, but it has to exist in our hearts, in our pocketbooks, in our homes, in our communities. So we have to seek peace, but we also have to create peace and protect peace. And then finally, self-criticism is, how can we do all of these things if we're not constantly evaluating ourselves? You know, I'm a human being, and I have my own, you know, story, and I have my own experience, but I constantly have to look in the mirror and constantly ask myself to be brave so that I can change, so that I can change to meet the call of the moment, whether it's fighting for my client's peace or defending them against an attack from, you know, some outrageous claim. I can only do that if I'm at my best. But I'm only at my best if I'm constantly evaluating myself. And that's where self-criticism comes in. So those are my core values.
You know, I've got to say, it's there's so much depth to Cheryl Deptovich Diaz that I would welcome you back in the future to go deeper into. There's so many things that we could go into. This could be an 8-hour episode if we let it go, because there's just like I said, so much depth to what you do and you know, just the way that you look at this, the way that you look at the law, and the way that you provide access to it to a lot of people that may feel that it's beyond their reach is just really remarkable. And it's one of the reasons I truly believe you're an influencer in this area. So I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information and sharing so much about yourself and really what drives you to do what you do. So I have to ask, how can people find out more about Cheryl Deptovich Diaz and the Diaz Law Firm? Because it really is a truly remarkable story, and you have so much to offer, and you give so much in as far as education that I think people need to know about you.
Thank you so much. I have enjoyed this conversation. I would be happy to come back. You have been a gracious host. Thank you so much. And people can find me on social media, Diaz Law Firm Cali. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, LinkedIn under Cheryl Deptovich Diaz. And I'm also, my space in the interwebs is diazlawfirm.net.
And I also want to bring up that because of your background, folks, you not only can provide information to folks in English. You can also Spanish and
Tagalog.
That's it. And that comes from?
The Philippines, yes. The last country in the world where divorce is still outlawed.
I know. I've seen you mention that, and that's just remarkable to me. I think that could be a whole episode on its own on how people deal with that. So.
No.
Well, Shelly, again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a true joy having you on. You can hear your passion and the emotion that you have around this, and I think you make a huge difference in a lot of people's lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jack. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks, there you have it. Definitely check out Diaz Law Firm. We'll have links on the show post, the website, social media, so that you can check out Cheryl. And really, if you find yourself in the situation, especially if you're in California, check it out, because there is someone out there that will take the time to understand your situation and help you navigate the legal process. So until next time on Influencers Radio, remember, you are the only real game changer.
You've been listening to Influencers Radio. To get all past shows and updates on future shows, visit influencersradio.com today.